Hello, everyone. I would like to take this time to congratulate Rachel Zachary, who won the very first copy of With Her Last Breath. Remember, you too can win a copy of this book by sharing one of our episodes on your social media page or leaving us a voice message about the episode at anchor.fm/elderqueen/message. Again, that's anchor.fm/elderqueen/message. Remember, leave us a voice message or share an episode on your page to enter a chance to win a copy of With Her Last Breath. During today's episode, we dive into a dialogue of recognizing the signs and how we can help those who are suffering from this illness.
Make sure that if you sense at all that someone is considering harming themselves, you do not leave them alone. You listen well, you ask the tough questions, and you get them help.
When it feels like they're flying and they're going to go off the handle, fly with them and try to slow them down. Or if it feels like they're walking too fast and they're walking right into the decision that they want to make, walk alongside them and try to steer them in another direction.
But we need to be really careful. Get them help regardless, whether they want the help or not.
Listen in to this dialogue and listen on how we can help those who are suffering from suicide.
The Ear, Evangelical and Reformed Christian Podcast. Welcome to The Ear, the Evangelical and Reformed, a Christian podcast that urges you to think deeper and draws you closer to God through faith. Through powerful sermons, teaching segments, and discussions, The Ear hopes to give you a different perspective on secular topics from a Christian worldview. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Please welcome your host, Brandon Queen.
Recognizing the signs of suicide of people are important, and it must be handled in such a way that helps that person and edifies them. One thing that we should strive to do is to love on them and listen to the person that is hurting. We should walk alongside the hurting. We as Christians are called to walk with the hurting people. We should be there to shed light on a statement a suicidal person might say, such as, "I must put an end to this tonight," or "I can't take this anymore." We must join them in their burden, grief, and carry their cross with them. And then they will know we are Christians by our love.
Good morning, podcast world. Welcome back to The Ear Podcast for another episode of Season 3, Suicide and Hope. And today we're going to be talking about recognizing the signs. We have with us the author of With Her Last Breath, Barbara Roberts. Welcome back, Ms. Barb.
Thank you so much. It's a privilege to be back with you, Brandon.
Awesome. Great to have you back. Now, we're going to go ahead and dive right on into these questions. And recognizing the signs is what this episode is entitled. And it's something that we as people need to learn how to do. All right. So I'm in law enforcement, so I have to learn how to read people. I have to learn how to investigate. I have to learn all these cool trades and tricks to help me with my career and to help me advance. Mm-hmm. Well, the same thing goes with friendships. You know, we have to be able to read our friends, understand our friends, understand our family members, so we can recognize anything that's off or odd with them. Would you say that would be a true statement, Ms. Barb?
I absolutely would. You know, when you think about it, the more we know somebody, the better we know somebody, then the better and the easier we'll know when things are just a bit off. They're just not quite right and something's going on with them, right? That's true with any friend of ours. So absolutely, that's a very true statement.
Okay. So within her last, well, in the book, With Her Last Breath, we kind of talked about Kathy's life in the past couple episodes, and we pointed out some things with her journal with the last 36 hours. You know, we said it was filled with compassion on some parts, filled with depression, and of course the thought of suicide and others, and then also how she was going to commit her act.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first question of the morning is, should we clarify depression and suicidal thoughts as a mental issue or not?
That's a great question. I think it's kind of yes, but, and how I would answer that is, it can be certainly a mental issue, but not necessarily an ongoing mental issue. I mean, sometimes, you know, people have gone along and gone along and gone along. Like, for instance, in the Denver area where I live, recently in the last few months, we've had a number of suicides at five area high schools. And these kids, and I didn't know all of them, but, you know, they lived life like a teenager would. And then they had one thing pile on another, and they made the horrible decision to end their life. I wouldn't call those necessarily mental health issues as much as I would call it difficult life situations. And maybe they didn't have the skills to cope, or maybe they didn't have someone really seriously listening to their needs. So I think it's a yes, possibly, but not always, is how I would answer that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Looking at the breakdown in today's society, of course, with bullying, that's probably one of the leading causes of suicide. I mean, like high school drama, for goodness sake. That's what 13 Reasons is based off of. You know, this girl was known as the joke of most people. You know, she was the quote unquote class whore. I hate to use that language, but, you know, and yeah, I agree with her. That's a very weighing situation, you know, but is it enough to take your own life? I mean, I'm not in her shoes. I'm not a female, you know, I don't know what it's like to be called those things. So, I do agree with you. Now, I want to go back in the book, even though we've kind of made some progress. I want to go back and I want to look at page 9. And okay. I really want to take a look. What are some of the risk factors of suicide?
Well, let me just go over some of these. Certainly, and this is kind of a no-brainer, but history of previous suicide attempts. Just because somebody attempted once or twice doesn't mean they're not going to try it again. Another issue is family history of suicide. You know, if there's somebody in, especially in their immediate family, who has taken their life, then when they come upon what seems to them at the moment like an impossible situation, that may seem like a way out. Another one is history of depression. Another one is alcohol or drug abuse. Somebody who is really involved and not thinking clearly. Maybe a stressful life event, like I mentioned. Certainly easy access to lethal methods. A horrible way our niece took her life was hanging herself. And I still have trouble grasping that and getting my arms around that. That's unusual for a woman. Exposure to the suicidal behavior of others. And I think the whole thing of incarceration, you know, you're a cop and you get all that. And I think for somebody that's going through some of the other factors we've talked about, that can just kind of be a last straw for someone.
Right. And I have got to commend my sheriff, Craig Weber. I mean, he's up for re-election right now, and I hope he wins. But this guy literally has a heart for, and we have to use the word inmates because that's what they are.
Sure.
But he has a heart for people, and he's all about rehabilitation.
And that's great.
Because of that mindset, like, suicidal tendencies will probably fade away in our correctional system here in Louisiana, in Thibodaux, because he is pouring all of his resources into rehabilitating the person, getting them the counseling they need, getting them the help they need, helping most of them get a GED. I mean, this guy is
wonderful,
brilliant. And I mean, it's a simple thing, if you want to look at it from a micro standpoint, it's a very simple thing that will actually help prevent a major thing.
That's amazing. You know? That's great.
So kudos to my sheriff. I mean, he's forethinking all of this stuff in the midst of a reelection.
Yeah, and that's amazing.
Has already accomplished most of it in the midst of a reelection. You know, so, I mean, this is a godly man that I respect. You know, I love this guy. He's my boss. And I'm not just saying that because he's up for reelection. I'm saying that because he is actually and has been for the past 3 years working on this. You know, and especially when it comes to incarceration rate. He wants to see that drop in this parish. And, you know, if we can keep them out of jail and keep them from making suicidal thoughts and give them the tools they need to survive in a world that's so harsh toward criminals, yes, that does help.
Absolutely.
So, what behaviors are warning signs of suicide? I mean, we talked about the risk factors, but what are some warning signs?
Well, that they talk about it, that they become despondent and just kind of don't have much interest in living and going on living. And, you know, things like drastic changes in behavior, maybe things that they loved, their work, their school, their hobbies, and kind of going along with that one is withdrawal from their friends and social activities. You know, all of a sudden they just want to go hide in their room. They prepare for death by making out a will or even talking about funeral arrangements. Giving away prized possessions is another thing. Kind of that preoccupied with death and dying, talking about it a lot. Watching things that, you know, just sort of are morbid and all encompassed with that. Lose an interest in personal appearance. Dramatically increase their use of drugs and alcohol. And then this might sound really weird, Brandon, but so we've talked about all these things and sort of the warning signs. And then all of a sudden, they're sort of euphoric. They were depressed and now they're not. Well, that's even a scarier thing because that might mean they've totally made the decision. So we really need to pay attention to that.
Absolutely. And you wrote in your book on page 10 that many behavioral and verbal clues, some subtle and others obvious, can alert a parent, a spouse, a teacher, a counselor, or a friend to one's suicidal intentions. And, you know, if you are a friend of a suicidal person, be intentional with your listening. And we talked about that in the last episode. So be intentional with your listening. And be very observant of signs. Because the two will work together for your favor, if you will. And you will be able to, you know, get the person help or at least start the process in some way. You know.
You bet.
Now, if a person seems troubled, is it safe to ask if they're thinking about hurting themselves? Or can that increase the danger of their suicidal commitment?
Well, let me answer the second one first. I don't believe it increases the danger. And for the first question, yes, I think not only is it safe to ask if they're thinking about hurting themselves, but I think we should. And we need to use discretion in how we ask that. And we're probably talking about somebody that we know, but I think it's really important to ask those direct questions. You know, communicate our concern for them and our support and our love for them. And I mean, it can be as simple and direct a question as, I'm really concerned. Are you thinking of taking your life? That might shock some people because they might feel like, oh, I would never ask that, but I think it's really, really important to be willing to be bold and ask that question.
Absolutely. Which brings me to my next one that I want to ask you. And this is a learning tool for us listening in. What kind of questions can we ask someone if you or we are worried about someone's mental health?
Well, let me just give you a few that I use on occasion with people as I'm walking alongside of them. I think I would say something like, you know how much I care about you and we're good friends, but I'm really concerned that something's different. And I'm concerned that you are thinking of harming yourself. Am I right there? Is that true? Tell me what thoughts you've had about that. I mean, I would kind of have a little conversation about that. I would ask direct questions, very specifically direct questions like that. You know, I've noticed that you've kind of isolated yourself from all the rest of us who love you, and you've given away a lot of things that really mean a lot to you. That concerns me. Are you thinking you won't be here long? Are you planning to harm yourself in some way? Are you actually thinking of taking your life? For people who are not used, Brandon, to asking those direct questions, that might seem way out of the box or incredibly bold. But what you need to realize is, as the one who is the caregiver or the friend or the one walking alongside, you need to be the one to ask those very direct questions. We need to take their plans and threats very seriously. You know, we can't take the risk that we might be wrong, and so we don't ask anything. And what if we are wrong? What if they make that decision and end their life and we haven't asked the direct question? It's really important.
Right. One of the things I asked my roommate, we have discussions about preaching the gospel to people all the time. And those who blatantly don't accept or don't want to hear anything about Jesus Christ, and, you know, my roommate will say, I've done all that I can do. And this person, you know, and he says in his eyes is probably damned for hell. And I always follow up with, are you sure you have done all you can do? And he's like, yes. I'm like, are you really, really sure? He's like, what are you getting at? Yes. I'm like, prayer.
Yeah.
Okay. You have to pray for the, and this goes for suicidal people too. Pray for the person going through the suicidal tendencies or the depression. Pray for yourself that God would sustain you to be able to handle all the baggage they bring to the conversation that you're trying to bring out of them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we can't be the burden bearers. You know, because that's Christ's job and he's done that for us already.
Right.
But we can definitely be the tool that God uses to dig out that garbage.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and bring it to him. And that's what we need to do. You know, and how can we provide help after we, you know, ask those questions? And it's very simple. You know, number one, do not be non-judgmental. You said that almost throughout all the episodes. You know, we got to treat our friends problem seriously. You know, you said that too. So I'm all about not being judgmental. You know, that's not my MO anyway. If I'm going to be judgmental, it's going to be toward myself because I'm my worst critic, but you know how that goes.
Yeah, I know. And you know, one thing, just an instance, this happened some time ago. I had somebody on the phone and I got a sense that they were definitely planning to take their life, and I didn't know them real well. They had called in and to my office, and so I was talking to them, and I thought, wow, this is going somewhere really serious. This may end in this person taking their life. So I just wouldn't let them off the phone, and I got the attention of my assistant, who went to another phone and actually called the police to have some come and do a wellness check. That sounds pretty drastic, but we need to be really careful. Get them help regardless.
Yeah.
Whether they want the help or not. And I mentioned this before, better to have them mad at us than dead. And right. so it's really important that we not give up.
And we do that in law enforcement here in Louisiana. You know, someone to sure. call. Hey, sure. I'm worried about so-and-so. You know, can you go check on them? And yeah. like, for example, if they live in the area of the person mm-hmm. they're calling about.
Yeah.
I like to take it a step further and say, show up before we get there.
Yeah.
Yes. And this is why. And I get frustrated when people call this in about a family member they're worried about. And mm-hmm. my question is, have you made the attempt to make contact with them?
Yes.
Or you just calling because you haven't heard from them and they made a statement mm-hmm. a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. so I'm like, okay, I'm glad you're calling it in. Don't get me wrong. I want you to do that. But be on scene before the cops get there because it's going to be easier for us to help this person because a family member is there than Absolutely. It is for a cop showing up. And the person can be, I'm not suicidal. Mm-hmm. And they can put mm-hmm. on a great show for us.
Yeah.
But we're only going to know the truth if it's a family member on scene that right. can actually look at that person and say, you made this comment. And then they begin to argue. And yeah. when that happens, I know, this is just mm-hmm. me speaking, I know that, mm-hmm. okay, that statement is probably true. Mm-hmm. Let me listen closely. Because yeah. one of two things can happen. It could be a true statement and I need to take action. Or the family member that called this complaint in is trying to sabotage or harass the family member they're calling about. So then I have to train myself. Hey, is this real? Should I take action? Look, let's call an ambulance just in case. You don't have to go with them because you can refuse.
Sure.
And we'll go from there. But if it's a if it's true, and the person says yes, I want to end my life. Then I'm doing yeah. one thing. I am stepping in that doorway and pushing them yeah. outside to where they cannot go back in the house. Closing yeah. the door, and I'll either detain them, call for backup until an ambulance gets there.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, so
absolutely.
I'd rather get reprimanded for pushing somebody than having them take their life in front of me.
Oh, isn't that the truth? You know? Oh, for sure.
You know, so the way we provide help all depends on how we execute the help we're trying to provide.
Yes, for sure.
So.
Yes, I agree.
Well, that concludes this short segment of Recognizing the Signs. And guys, I got to tell you, pay more attention to your surroundings. You know, pay more attention to the people around you because you never know what they're going through. And if you don't pay attention and pick it up quickly, it's going to be too late. And then, you know, you're going to be stuck with, well, what if I would have, or I should have, or I could have? Well, at that point, it's too late. But just because, you know, if it happened to you and a person took their life and you didn't do anything, there is still hope and there's still time for you to redeem yourself and help the next person. You know, that's my take on that. Anything you'd like to add, Ms. Barb?
I think you've concluded it well. You know, make sure that if you sense at all that someone is considering harming themselves, you do not leave them alone. You listen well, you ask the tough questions, and you get them help.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, my call to action for my listeners, again, I'm going to urge you to, you know, participate in this giveaway, get a free copy of this book. This is not just a journal of how Kathy took her life. This is also an instructional manual on how to help people. I have a copy of this in my personal library. And I go to this book every now and again when I have questions, you know, and something that I can actually do from this book for law enforcement is make a suicidal checklist. Okay. And it's a checklist of when I get on scene, do I observe this? Do I observe that? If I observe A, then I must do B. Or if I get on scene and I observe C, then I have to go and do A to get to, you know, B. So I'm going to be working on that kind of checklist to kind of help law enforcement, you know, make better judgment on suicidal patients, if you will. So, Ms. Barb, thank you for producing such great work and taking up the gauntlet, if you will, and having to read your niece's suicidal letter over and over while preparing this book. You know, you are a godsend. Thank you so much for, you know, being that bearer of, you know, of suicide, if you will, you know, not many people want to talk about this.
I know.
And it's depressing, you know, ironically, that nobody wants to talk about it, you know, but instead we bottle this stuff up.
Yeah.
And then it's too late.
Thank you for your kind thoughts, Brandon, and thank you for your heart.
Yeah, I
care.
Thank
you for your caring heart.
I care. This is something I care about. You know, I'd hate to lose someone else, you know, to suicide. You know, I've lost a couple of friends to it, you know, and it's not fun. And it's not an easy task.
It is not.
So, listeners, remember, let's walk together with those who are suffering. Let's suffer in their pain. Let's curl up and be next to them when they need it. When it feels like they're flying and they're going to go off the handle, fly with them and try to slow them down. Or if it feels like they're walking too fast and they're walking right into the decision that they want to make, walk alongside them and try to steer them in another direction. Or if they're just crawling to that decision, crawl with them and try to make them go in another direction. Do something. Doing something always helps. Never do nothing. Everyone's life matters. Ms. Barb, thank you so much for your help.
Thank you, Brandon, very much. God bless you.
God bless.
This is Steve Selyards, the author of The GI Junkie, and here are some Presbyterian history notes for the week of September 15th. Sunday, September 15th. Thomas Rice Welch was born on this day in 1825. He was a pastor in Kentucky and Arkansas, notably at First Presbyterian Church of Little Rock. He was one of the organizers and the first president of the board of Arkansas College, later named Lyon College, a position he held to his death. He was the moderator of the 1872 PCUS General Assembly. Monday, September 16th. On this day in 1901, the PCUSA began ministry training in Spanish in a rented facility associated with the Manal School in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Tuesday, September 17th. In 1851, William Anderson McDowell died. He was a pastor in New Jersey and South Carolina, and served as the secretary of the Board of Domestic Missions. He was the moderator of the 1833 PCUSA General Assembly. Wednesday, September 18th. Clarence E. McCartney was born on this day in 1879. He was the son of a pastor in the Reformed Presbyterian Church of North America, but trained at Princeton and was ordained in the PCUSA. He was a pastor in New Jersey, Philadelphia, and Pittsburgh, and in a couple of those cases, he successfully redeveloped struggling urban churches. He served as the moderator of the 1924 PCUSA General Assembly. He is known for his responses to Harry Emerson Fosdick's modernist preaching, especially his reply titled, "Shall Unbelief Win?" He was an ally of J. Gresham Machen, but they differed on some actions. McCartney stepped down from the board of Westminster Theological Seminary, and he remained a PCUSA pastor his whole career. Thursday, September 19th. In 1729, the Adopting Act was approved by the Synod of Philadelphia. This made the Westminster Standards the official confessional statements for the Synod. Permanent ministers were required to believe or subscribe to the essential and necessary parts of the standards. But defining what was essential and necessary was not agreed upon, and was left to the individual presbyteries to determine. This was a compromise between Scotch-Irish Presbyterians, who preferred strict subscription to the confessions, and the New Englanders, who believed in greater flexibility, and that strict subscription violated the principle of sola scriptura. Friday, September 20th. This was the day in 1662 that was the deadline for ministers in Scotland who had been ordained after 1649 to appear before their patron and newly restored bishops to receive episcopal ordination. The objective was to bring Presbyterian ministers back under the prelates in Charles II's drive to restore his authority as the head of the church. I don't think I need to tell you that almost no Presbyterian ministers complied, and after further actions were taken through the fall, over 400 were ejected from their charges. Saturday, September 21st. On this day in 1839, the Presbytery of Lorraine in Ohio dissolved. It had been formed only 3 years before from the Presbytery of Cleveland, but when the General Assembly ended the plan of union in 1837, a substantial number of Congregationalist churches left, so the remaining Presbyterian churches joined the Presbytery of Huron. Thanks for joining me here on the EAR podcast, and I look forward to joining you again next week.
You have reached the end of yet another episode from The Ear. We hope that God's word remains on the ears of the listeners. We pray that this podcast would urge you to go forth and spread His good news to the world. Thank you for tuning in. Please don't forget to subscribe to our podcast. See you at the next episode. God bless you, and may His glory shine upon you.